I am sworn to uphold the Constitution as Andy Johnson understands it and interprets it. Outside of the Constitution, we have no legal authority more than private citizens, and within it, we have only so much as that instrument gives us. This broad principle limits all our functions and applies to all subjects.
History's strange, it's alien, and it won't give us what we would like to have.
The McPherson Financial Group bringing you this hour of Bill Mick Live on 92.7 FM WMMB. Nice to have you along for the conversation on a Tuesday. And if it's Tuesday, 8 o'clock hour, it's time for Dave Bowman, who's been with us through the whole show, but now it's going to be his platform as Dave Does History. By the way, at BillMick.com, headline there today, space, soccer, and signatures. Well, we've been through all of those. Now we're going to do a little bit of history. There are links to Dave Bowman, the DaveBowmanShow.com, and Dave Does History, his bibliography there. Dave, what are we diving into on a Tuesday morning here?
You know, they say, Mark Twain once said, history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme.
Okay, I like that.
What if, dot, 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 what if we had a president of the United States who disagreed with Congress on everything? And when I say everything, I mean everything. What if the Congress then passed a law that was so important to the national development of our society that it was deemed by many people in many places as a, quote, new birth of freedom, unquote, and the president then vetoed the law?
Sounds like fighting words to me.
What would the reaction be? And if that were to happen, how would it change the course of the nation? What would be the result of a direct conflict between the power and authority of the executive and the power and authority of Congress to make law? And if this were to ever happen, what could Congress do to make sure that no president could ever even try to do this again? Because
that's interesting, because the power is allegedly in the people, right? And that's what Congress is there to be, the representatives of the people. And like, not like the president, is it? But
like I said,
in touch, right?
History often rhymes, and what we pull from the headlines today, as the Bible says, there's nothing new under the sun.
We'll figure it all out when we continue in 60 seconds on Bill Mick Live. Dave Bowman bringing us Dave Does History on Bill Mick Live. So a presidential congressional loggerheads, Dave, and the president says, I'm vetoing your stuff. You're not representing the people, I am.
Well, let's.
Now, where did I have?
Well, let's step back for a minute. This time it was me. So,
okay, good enough. We have too many buttons in front of us, Dave. That's what it is.
On April 15th, 1865. Andrew Johnson, or as he would have preferred it, Andy Johnson, became president of the United States upon the death of his predecessor, Abraham Lincoln. Mm-hmm. Now, what I need you to understand is that Andy Johnson was not a Republican. He did not belong to the president's party. He was not part of the Republican movement. In fact, Andy Johnson was a Southerner. And he was a Democrat, or as he would have preferred the term, he was part of the democracy, because that's what they called themselves back then.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Southerner, and you need to keep that in mind above all else. He was not.
Where?
He's from Tennessee.
Okay.
In fact, he'd been the military governor of Tennessee. He was a Unionist Democrat. He was a Democrat who favored the Union, did not support the Confederacy, and then ultimately, Lincoln named him as the vice presidential nominee because they felt like he needed the border states to support him in the 1864 election. As it turns out, he didn't, but nobody knew that at the time.
A reasonable political move, you would think.
You would think. Andy Johnson had a reputation for being a very hard drinker. In fact, at his inauguration as vice president, there was much discussion about his condition at that event and how embarrassing it was. After he was inaugurated as president on April 15th, 1865, most of the contemporary reports, in fact, all of the contemporary reports of that day, indicate that he was, like most of the nation, in shock. It's only later, much later, about 2 or 3 years later, when rumors begin to percolate that Andy Johnson was hungover and, in fact, probably still drunk. But those rumors don't start until later on, and that's important to keep in mind. In 1866, or by 1866, the United States is in an issue of profound transformation. We're navigating this whole idea of Reconstruction following the end of the Civil War. It is a nation grappling with the integration of millions of free slaves into the social, economic, and political fabric of the country. Okay, the war is over, the slaves are free, the 13th Amendment has been passed, now what? The 13th Amendment doesn't say anything about citizenship. So the Dred Scott ruling is technically still the law of the land. African Americans cannot be citizens. So what do we do at this point in all of this idea? In 1866, Congress comes up with what is known as the Civil Rights Act of 1866. This is going to try to address a lot of these things. And I wish we had the time to go into the person who's most behind all this, a guy by the name of Henry Wilson, who is a senator from Massachusetts. He is a fascinating character in history, and maybe someday in the future we'll get to him, but he's really the driving force behind all this. And this law, this 1866 Civil Rights Act, does essentially seven things. It provides equal rights, regardless of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. Does that sound familiar? Mm-hmm. They're now citizens. This is a law, though, not an amendment. It provides legal protection to those people for anybody that violates those equal rights. It gives civil remedies. In other words, you can now file lawsuits against people who are violating your civil rights. It gives the government, the federal government, the power to act in these cases. It provides for penalties and prosecutions and judicial proceedings. It's particularly important in the South because local courts down there didn't like to prosecute people who violated freedmen's rights. And by implication, there's nothing in the law that actually says this, but by implication, it contains provisions that affect former Confederates. It limits their ability to participate in punishing or holding back the newly freed African American population. It doesn't say Confederates, but it's one of those things that everybody kind of reads into it and says, oh, hey, it must be there, right? Because those are the people who would do this anyway. Now, the problem with this law, Bill, is that it gives Congress the power to enact all of this stuff. Now, you might hear all these verbiages that I just read to you and say to yourself, but Dave, that sounds so familiar. Yes. It does. Much like the Emancipation Proclamation is an executive order, executive orders can be overturned, revoked, undone. We've seen that time and time again. So Lincoln signs an executive order saying the slaves are henceforth and forevermore free. Andy Johnson steps into office and says, maybe he says, no, they're not. Which is why Lincoln pushes so hard for the 13th Amendment. And in fact, Congress will make the 13th Amendment's ratification a requirement for readmission into the United States government. In other words, if you're the state of, pick a state, Confederacy, Mississippi, you have to ratify the 13th Amendment before they will let you back into Congress, your senators and your representatives. Actually, Mississippi is a bad one to choose because Mississippi doesn't actually ratify the 13th Amendment until the 1990s. So let's go with Georgia. Wow. Georgia ratifies it. They expect they have elections in the fall of 1864. They send people to Congress. They expect to be seated, and Congress says, no, we've changed our mind, which is a story for another day.
Right.
But because they're not seated, Andy Johnson looks at this law and says, how can you pass a law like this when you're not allowing these Confederate states to be back in the government of the United States? You're violating the Constitution because you're denying them their suffrage. You told them that if they passed the 13th Amendment, you'd let them back in, and now you're not. Andy Johnson, who is a Southerner, objects to this strenuously. He thinks that this violates, here's a phrase for you, states' rights. He's not in favor of this bill because even if it does a transformational element, it denies the involvement of the southern states who are not seated in Congress yet. He has a completely different philosophy about what Reconstruction will look like. How do you reconstruct these southern states that have been in a state of rebellion and are now slowly coming back? He's seeing things differently than the Republican Congress does. The Republican Congress, particularly the radical Republicans, or as they will be known as the Black Republicans, see this as a military occupation. We have defeated a military opponent, and we are going to punish them much as you would, you know, Imperial Germany after World War I. They see this as conquest and control, whereas Lincoln may not have seen it that way, and Andy Johnson certainly doesn't see it that way. But the biggest problem with Andy Johnson, as far as the Civil Rights Act goes, is that he is a Southerner of the 19th century. He is, I guess the best way to say it is to just say it. He does not believe that African Americans are equal to the white man. He does not believe that African Americans should be citizens. He is a Southern racist of that era, because that's what most of them were at that point.
Our weekly dive into history. Dave Bowman joins us on Bill Mick Live.
The McPherson Financial Group, this hour's sponsor of the program. Dave Bowman with Dave Does History. As we look at a president who can't get along with Congress, vetoing a law that they deemed important, and then the battle is on. Dave, that's where we are when we pick it back up here.
A law so important, Bill, that as I read you some of the language in that bill, you're going to be familiar with that language, because this law was so important that it essentially forms the foundational element of the 14th Amendment because of what's going to happen downstream. Picking up where I left off, what you need to know about Andy Johnson is that he was a Southern white racist, typical of the 1860s. Okay, he's not unusual. There's nothing bizarre about that in the 1860s, but he was pretty intense about that. And so his opposition to the Civil Rights Act of 1866 is basically racism, his different philosophy about Reconstruction, and his belief that states' rights are being violated. What's surprising about this bill, though, is that there is some Republican opposition to it as well. There's concern about the political and economic interests. If you start upsetting the established social and economic order in the South particularly, how does this work? I mean, we have the same argument today. If you bring in a bunch of illegal immigrants, how does that affect the economy? Well, now you have a bunch of freed slaves. How does that affect the economy? There's deep concerns about racial attitudes, of course. It would be a myth to say that all Republican Congress people of the 1860s were believers in equal rights. They weren't. But the biggest concern, Bill, is that can Congress actually do this constitutionally? Can Congress actually enforce this law constitutionally? And if the Supreme Court overturns this law after a challenge and we lose, then what? You know, how do we protect the rights of the freedmen in that situation? If we do this this federal overreach and the court overturns it, we're going to be set back. And something that people don't really think about with regards to the American Civil War is that post-war, the South actually has more representation now in Congress than it did before the Civil War, because now the slaves, the former slaves, are now counted as full people instead of 3/5 of a person.
Uh-huh.
So all of a sudden they have more political power than they had before. Now this is going to lead to a huge situation that we don't have time to get into with the 14th Amendment and how that gets ratified and passed and everything downstream. But for the moment, this law is in the focal point. The law passes Congress, and it's well generally received in some places, not so much in others. But Andy Johnson vetoes the bill on March 26th, 1866, today. He vetoes the bill. Nope, this is not constitutional. I don't support it. And he vetoes it. Congress is going to do something that would never happen today, which is that they are going to override the veto. And so the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which again, there's a lot of Southern approval of the veto. There's a lot of racial components to this. There are a lot of people, even in the North, who oppose the law because they don't agree with that. And there's a lot of outrage. But generally speaking, the African-American community, its allies, the anti-slavery movement, they are generally supportive of the bill being overridden, the veto being overridden. The press reaction is fascinating. If you have time to go read the newspapers, they're pretty. The language that newspapers use in those days is so much better. I mean, it's just better than the writing today. And the way that they describe all this is pretty entertaining in the sense of whether you're pro or against it. And that depends on, of course, which newspaper you work for.
That's true. So they work to override this veto and do it. Like you said, not something we would see in today's Congress, I don't think at all.
Yeah, I can't imagine today's Congress overriding a veto, which speaks to part of the problem, I guess, with this whole thing. When this thing is overridden, it results in a massive political mobilization on the part of the radical Republicans. They believe that their actions in overriding this veto, which, by the way, still has not gone to the law still hasn't gone to the Supreme Court yet. Nobody's challenged it. But they believe that the fact that they had to override the president's veto underscores the need to reduce the president's power and to ensure civil rights protections through constitutional amendments and further legislation. And so this is what begins what was already started, but it really begins to coalesce now into what will be known as the 14th Amendment. His veto and his reasons of doing so lead to so much argument about and anger that there's concern again that the law will not withstand judicial scrutiny, keeping in mind because again, you still have a Southern Democrat dominated Supreme Court at that point and court system. And so realistically speaking, the only way to address this is by amending the Constitution, which hopefully everyone is familiar with the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment is really six or seven proposed amendments kind of stitched together, but it addresses almost everything that was in the original bill. Citizens, who's a citizen? Any person born or naturalized, not subject to their previous condition of servitude, privileges and immunities, deprivation of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, which we could spend years talking about due process of law, mm-hmm. Equal protection, representation, who can be representative, validity of debt, and of course, the infamous Section 5, Congress shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article. But keep in mind that one of the things Congress wanted to do was clip the wings of the presidency. And so we get that Section 3, which we're told today is about the Confederates. Aren't we told that? Oh, this is just really yeah. It was just about Confederates. But the word Confederates never appears there, does it? Yeah. And I have a theory as to why that's the case. This is also going to lead, partially, to the impeachment of Andrew Johnson. He'd become the first president impeached, and the impeachment will fail by one vote. And the reason that it fails by one vote is because, well, political shenanigans. We have a different system today about who becomes president if the president is impeached. And keep in mind, under Andy Johnson, there was no vice president. So who becomes the president if he gets impeached? And a lot of the moderate Republicans were not comfortable with that person. And so they may have voted for acquittal just because they didn't want the next guy in line to be president, which isn't a very good reason to do it. But
like always, it's more politics than it is concern over rights or anything else.
Exactly. But it does lead us to question some things that we need answers to. Why doesn't it say Confederates? Well, I submit to you that it wasn't written about Confederates. I submit to you it was written about Andrew Johnson.
And we'll figure it out when we continue in moments. Stay with us on WMMB.
Something to add to the conversation? Call Bill now, 321-768-1240.
The McPherson Financial Group, this hour, sponsor the program. You missed anything we've done all day? You can always catch up with it in the podcast section at BillMick.com and the Bill Mick Live iHeartRadio channel. Putting a lid on Dave Does History for this week. And Dave, we've gotten to the presidential impeachment of Andy Johnson and the congressional veto override, leading now to the 14th Amendment. Where are you taking us next, sir?
So the 14th Amendment essentially codifies as constitutional the Civil Rights Act of 1866. So now no one can take it to the court and say this is unconstitutional because now it's in the Constitution. The Congress, 39th Congress, tells the states that in order to be readmitted now, they not only have to approve the 13th Amendment, now they have to approve the 14th Amendment, or they don't get to come back yet. Well, of course, pretty much all of them except Mississippi do, and Mississippi gets back in anyway, and we move on in history. Andy Johnson's impeachment is it's a last-ditch effort to get him out. Andy Johnson, we don't comprehend this today, he's a very powerful politician, and within the Democrat Party and in the South, he's very popular. It's very possible that he could have been reelected as the president. But then we read these words in Article 14, or Amendment 14, Section 3. No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or an elector or president, vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, or under any state, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress, officer of the United States, member of state legislature, or an executive judicial officer of any state to support, defend, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion. We're all familiar with that, right?
Yes.
But then it says, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. Now, who's the only person in history that meets all of those criteria? There's only one. Guess who it is?
Andy Johnson.
Andy Johnson is the only one that meets all of those conditions. And if you happen to believe that his veto of the Civil Rights Act of 1866 gave aid or comfort to the enemies thereof, the United States, can you kind of stitch that in there a little bit?
A difference of political opinion, the president exercising authority given him in the Constitution.
But he's helping the enemies thereof. He's helping the Confederates.
I've been throwing a piece of legislation.
But he's helping them. And, well, Bill, maybe there's another piece of evidence that we can talk about here.
Okay.
On April 15th, 1865, there was a note found at the hotel where Andy Johnson stayed. It was written by one of the conspirators in the Lincoln assassination. And it appears to have been written to Andrew Johnson saying, quote, I need to talk to you. It's urgent. And there are many within the Republican Party, particularly the radical side, who believe to their dying day. Now, they will never say this in public, but they will whisper about it in private conversations, who believe fervently that Andrew Johnson was a conspirator, a co-conspirator in the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, for the same reasons that John Wilkes Booth gave, which is that he wanted the South to win. And by vetoing this act, he essentially hands the Confederates everything that they said that they were fighting for, more political power. They maintain the black codes and the black laws. The only thing that's actually changed is that they don't own slaves anymore, but with the black codes, they might as well be slaves. And there are many in Congress who see that as giving aid or comfort to the enemies of the United States. What if, and it's just a theory, what if Section 3 of the 14th Amendment wasn't written for Confederates specifically? What if it was written to keep Andrew Johnson out of power? If he had been elected, they could have said, nope, you're not being seated for these reasons right here. And ultimately,
I've got a question.
Go ahead.
Was Nancy Pelosi the Speaker of the House when this happened?
No, she was not.
she may not have been old enough yet, but she
probably
was close.
Andrew Johnson never holds office again. So we don't know because it was never used. But what if the reason it was written was less about Donald Trump and more about Andrew Jackson, Andy Johnson, who on this day in 1866 vetoed the Civil Rights Act of 1866.
Let's get to phone calls on this interesting impeachment and 14th Amendment story. We start with Brody in West Melbourne. Hey, Brody, good morning.
Good morning, Dave. Two quick comments. The 14th Amendment, I believe, was a just amendment, but it really hindered state rights, what the Constitution ratified in the 9th Amendment. So on that fact, I think it hinders state rights to be, you know, free from the federal government to do what they like. But it also, you know, ended slavery. But on the other thing, just a quick comment. You need to come to the, get out of Washington State, come down to Southern Mesa line if you're going to talk like a Southerner.
Thanks, Brody. Good to have you along. Go ahead, Dave.
You do know that I am a Southerner, right?
How do you define that, Dave? Because you've lived and
my
grown up
family
everywhere.
My family is from Arkansas, Alabama, Texas, Oklahoma. I was raised down there, spent many years in Georgia, where my father, of blessed memory, constantly refers to me as, well, did before he passed, sorry, referred to me as, quote, his Yankee son, unquote. The 14th Amendment did not free the slaves. The 13th Amendment did. But yes, you're absolutely correct. And this is something people don't want to talk about. There is no 9th or 10th Amendment anymore. The 14th Amendment eviscerated those. But because they're post 9th and 10th, it's a change. It's a valid part of the Constitution. This is one of the objections to the 14th Amendment that many states had. Many of the states at the time saw that as violating their 9th and 10th Amendments rights. And in fact, California would not ratify the 14th Amendment until 1950 for the same reasons. So, yeah. But why are we? This is what Professor Amar refers to as a new constitution. The 14th Amendment essentially establishes a new constitution, and it's less about states and more about federal, which of course Hamilton and Madison would have loved. And Franklin,
you're up next on Bill Mick Live with Dave Bowman. Go ahead.
Dave's a darn Yankee, huh? Okay, just Keith from Palm Bay. Dave. Just a quick question. I noticed that after, you know, he was vice president of Abraham Lincoln, and after he was assassinated, is there a requirement or anything to pick a vice president within a certain amount of time, or did that change after that? I mean, if the president got killed the very day of the inauguration after he got inaugurated, can the vice president be president and not get a vice president the whole term, whole 4 years?
Well, interesting question, Keith. What do you think, Dave?
Again, the Constitution has changed. Today we have the 25th Amendment. We also have the 22nd Amendment. These are things which are that change that. at the time, in 1865, the tradition was that the vice president became president. That was established by John Tyler. And at the time, there was no clear-cut in other words, there were a lot of people who did not think that the vice president should become the president. And John Tyler basically just stood up and said, I'm it. I'm taking the oath. If you don't like it, tough. And he did. And so that sort of set the tradition. At the time, the presidential succession went from the president to the vice president to the senator pro tem, who happened to be a guy by the name of Benjamin Wade of Ohio, who was hated by middle of the road Republicans. And again, many of them voted to acquit Andrew Johnson, not because they liked Andrew Johnson, but because they hated Ben Wade and they didn't want him to be president. And no, at the time, there was no requirement to choose a vice president. And in fact, many people didn't.
Interesting. Line three, you're up on Bill Mick Live. Good morning.
Good morning, Garcia, Cape Canaveral. Hey, I love this program. I love everything you do there. I do have a question. Is the 10th Amendment now to be considered null and void?
It is not null and void, but it's going to be subservient or subsumed under the 14th Amendment. Can you bring, if you are a state, can you bring a suit under the 10th Amendment? You can, but unless that lawsuit clearly shows that the 14th Amendment doesn't apply, and in most civil rights legislation, in fact, in virtually every case that's a civil rights case, you will see if you read the case, under the 14th Amendment and First Amendment, Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment, whatever, will be the way it's worded. And the reason it's worded that way is because the 14th Amendment takes precedence over those things. Is it there? Yes. Does it override the 14th Amendment? Not really, no.
Dave, we've talked in the past about, even during revolutionary times, how quickly the word would pass about what was going on politically in Philadelphia or Washington or where, or New York or wherever it may have been. How quickly was this news going around about this particular law and then the impeachment of Andy Johnson?
The impeachment of Andrew Johnson was followed, much like the Lincoln-Douglas debates. There were reporters in the gallery, and they were writing up their reports, which were then being telegraphed around the country. It wasn't followed quite as closely as you might think as it would be today. I mean, today we'd have C-SPAN and we're all stuck to it going, oh, gotcha, gotcha, gotcha. It really wasn't necessarily that way. It was more a lot of political backroom maneuvering. And again, it all came down to, if Benjamin Wade becomes president of the United States in 1868, what's different? And remember, there was an election in 1868. U.S. Grant was running against whoever the Democrat nominee was going to be, and Johnson wanted to be that nominee. Nobody was going to beat Grant anyway.
That's a good point. Line one, last call of the day. Good morning. Line two, you're up on Bill Mick Live. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. It's Randy from Indiana.
Yeah, Randy, go.
Dave got me thinking, which amendments were listing rights given by God, and can you write a N+1 amendment that says that the First Amendment is invalid, which we believe is given to us by God?
Oh, interesting question. Dave, I'll let you handle it.
I'm not clear I follow, because the First Amendment doesn't give you a right. It prevents the government from impinging on that right.
Right.
So I'm not clear on what he's asking there. Sorry.
I think he's talking about the 14th basically absorbing and reframing the 10th. So if these rights are given by God, which ones are man allowed to override?
Right, but it doesn't, it's not giving rights. It's saying the government can't interfere with those rights.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure where the question's going. Sorry. You want to send me an email, Dave, at the Dave Bowman Show.
Yeah.
Send me an email.
DaveBowmanShow.com. Dave, I got 10 seconds. Any highlights for next week?
Oh, not yet. Sorry.
Okay. We'll get to it. Wide Open Wednesday tomorrow. It's up to you what we talk on that day right here. We'll see you then.